Welcome to another episode of Superheroes and Sci-Fi, Musings with Adam and Ryan. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good, Adam, and yourself?
I'm doing well, and you know why I'm doing well?
Why?
Because this is probably the first time in about six episodes or so that I haven't botched the intro. So, it's a good day.
Am I just not paying attention? Have you been botching it every Friday?
Well, almost botching it. Almost. It's either I've already botched it or I'm almost botching it. But I got it right this time, and that's all that matters, folks.
Maybe because I'm just not noticing it because I don't pay attention until you say my name or something. I don't know. Maybe that's okay, it. So,
could very well be. Could very well
the fame of this podcast is already getting to my head. I'm already sitting in my desk with the glasses.
You've gone full diva, my friend.
Exactly. Oh, it's only going to get worse.
Good to know. I'll keep that in mind. But other than that, I'm good. It's still the weather is still, you know, the weather and not realizing that we're almost in March and it's still freezing.
The snow has melted, but it's, you know, the wind still hurts my face.
Yeah, the wind is, and we're supposed to get a wind warning. Kind of thing.
Oh, lovely. I love those.
I think Sunday, so that'll be it. Have you done any reading this week? Non-DC or?
Oh, you know me. I'm going to do DC stuff occasionally throughout the show. But yes, this week I did read something that was not either of the big two. My comic book, you know, recommendation suggestion for this week is actually from Dynamite. Oh. And it's the first issue of the Battlestar Galactica Twilight Command comic.
Uh-huh.
First Battlestar Galactica any kind of comic that I've ever read. I, you know that they've done stuff in the past, but I think it's a, you know, great, fantastic first issue. It takes place kind of in between seasons 2 and 3 of the show.
Okay.
You know, since season 2 ended with Gaius Baltar becoming president and settling on New Caprica, and because he was just such a frack up, you know, he...
I see what you did there. I like that.
Ah, exactly.
Well done.
You know, he let resources get stretched so thin that when the Cylons came and occupied, you know, what was left of humanity had to give up and surrender. And, you know, Twilight Command, based on just this first issue, it looks like it's... The Cylons would consider them terrorists, but, you know, freedom-loving people would consider them a resistance group. Mm-hmm. And I think it's off to a good start. And actually, if anything, it makes me want to go back and rewatch the show.
Wow,
I mean, which I haven't done in years.
Well, you're gonna have to do that eventually, right?
So, I know, that's why.
Might as well wait till I'm ready, and then we'll do it together.
Okay.
That makes some sense instead of having to watch it twice in short order.
Exactly.
Oh, that's a good poll. I can't wait to read it. Usually what I do with the Dynamite books, because I do those digitally, what I like to do is wait a month and a half or two, and the price drops to like $1, and so then I buy it.
Unlike Comixology, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
And no, it's not because I'm cheap, but if you can get a comic for 99 cents, why not?
I mean, my copy is, you know, physical. It's probably one of the very, very, very few physical non-DC books that I collect. But, I mean, even though it's been a long time since I've watched the show, I still love the remake of Battlestar Galactica, I should say. I've never actually gone and watched the original, though.
Yeah.
But I love the Sci-Fi Channel remake.
I think it's one of the best sci-fi pieces of television I've ever seen. So.
Yep. Amen to that.
Take that for what you will.
And what about you, good sir?
Yes, I read some Marvel this week, and I'm a little bit behind on my. Actually, no, I'm not behind, but I haven't mentioned this one before. It's Avengers 14, and they've. I don't know if I told you, but in the current book, they've included. They're doing a story that involves vampires.
And so, I did not know that.
And so Blade...
is Blade an Avenger now?
Yes, Blade has become an Avenger.
Yes, yes.
And to that I say, it's about damn time. Because listen, I love... So the book is good because it has... So there's this war between like factions of vampires. And there's this sect of vampires that is going to take down Dracula and his... coven or cave or however you say it, of vampires. And so there's this big war brewing, and the Avengers, you know, they're all sort of like, what do we do here? And someone that's smart enough says, I know, it's called Blade. And so they get Blade, into the, I think Black Panther recruited him actually. So Black Panther goes and gets Blade, and in the latest issue, at the end of the latest issue, we get our first look at Dracula. And oh boy, that splash page, I've never seen Dracula look so old and so somewhat frail, yet, like, I don't know how they did this, but he looks old, frail, and yet still badass.
Like Gary Oldman and Bram Stoker's Dracula? Like kind that of, kind of frail?
Kind of, yeah, kind of. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But in a comic book, to do that, I mean, you could do that in a movie because you have a lot of, you know, techniques at your disposal.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
in a comic, you got to be a really good artist to pull off all three of those attributes.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the minute they said we're putting Blade in this, they got my money. So, Marvel, I have two recommendations for you. One, give Blade his own solo comic again, please, and you can take my money.
I'm surprised that they haven't done that in a long while.
It bugs me. I'm telling you, it really bothers me. The second thing, well, Blade is one of my favorite Marvel characters. And then the second thing is, I don't care if you do it via Hulu or if you do it, or if you do it via, you know, a big screen movie or whatever, but get Blade back in live action.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous that, I mean, it's been long. What is it, 2002? Since the last Blade movie?
Blade Trinity.
Blade Trinity, yeah.
Blade Trinity was 2004, but we're... Oh. Hold on. Blade Trinity was 2004, but the Blade TV show was... Crap.
06.
2000, 06. Yeah, 06. So
I like that
it's
show.
It's been over a decade.
Did you see that show? Have you seen that show?
Never, but I've heard, you know, fantastic things about it.
Oh, my friend. I think that's another thing we're going to have to do.
Oh, my God.
I know you're going to say, oh, my God, I got no social life. But it's only one season.
Sadly.
Exactly. Sadly.
Only one season, and it looks like it was only 13 episodes. So yeah. It's just a...
So it's
like a Netflix thing. Okay.
But yeah, make it that. Come on, 2 weeks, you'll be done. No, but you know what? We're going to do a big Blade review, and we're going to review the movies and the series, and everybody will be happy.
Hmm.
But my point is, Blade should be back in the comics and live action.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somebody did... Yeah, that guy there, the artist there, Boss Logic. Have you seen his work?
I love Boss Logic, yes. Yeah, I haven't seen a Blade thing, but in general, great. I love Boss Logic.
Yeah, he's great. And he's done, you know...
How's that guy not been hired by a movie studio?
I think he does work for movie studios, I think.
I fracking hope so.
He should be, and he should be getting all the money.
Exactly. I would hire him if I was, you know, doing a, you know, big budget.
If I had money, I'd hire him.
Exactly.
Just make me one of your art, I'll pay for it. I'm going to have him do the map of my multiverse wives.
Oh, good lord.
That's what I should
Here
hire.
We go.
Yeah,
I quit for the podcast.
That's a good idea. I'm going to investigate that. How much would he charge for that? But no, he recently did a Blade piece of art with what's that guy that was in the Green Book, and he was in Alita: Battle Angel.
Marshala Ali.
Yeah, I think that's how you say his name. Yeah, him.
He did fan art
with him as Blade. And now I've gotten to the point where that's all.
Cottonmouth Stokes has.
Yeah.
As a Blade. That's a good choice. I like that.
And now I want it. Like, I saw that art and I said, well, that's it now. Come on, Marvel. And you're, we're going to make our rated movies once we get to it. So let me finish by saying, first of all, I don't want to spoil the book, but pick up the damn book. It's fantastic. That's my recommendation. But I don't understand when they get, you know, Disney's got to, what they got to do is create a Marvel Knights banner, okay, like the comics, and in 2 years when they're allowed to do something, bring Daredevil back. I don't care if it's with Charlie Cox. Just do something with Daredevil. Do something with the Punisher under this Marvel Knights banner. For the love of God, do something with Ghost Rider. And also, for the love of God, do something with Blade. That's my wish list. Come on, Marvel. It's not that hard. I'm not asking for much.
Dude, I know. Actually, I kind of like the idea. You know, kind of like in a little weird way, like what Warner Brothers doing with their, you know, cinematic Elseworlds slash Black Label movies, starting with Joker, is to do these smaller budget, smaller scaled stories that can have a little bit, maybe a little bit more freedom.
Yeah.
I like that idea. All right, I'm on board.
All right, good. I sold you.
A Marvel Knights banner, yeah. That's a way we can get the freaking Defenders back in.
Yeah, although I think when Marvel gets the rights back in 2 years, because right now there's a clause where...
Yeah, they can't... Yeah, which...
For 2 years, so...
It's like Netflix. It's a good thing you have Umbrella Academy, because I'd flip you off right now if I could.
I think, honest to God, I think that when Marvel does bring them back in some way, shape, or form, unfortunately, I think they'll be recast.
I mean, I'm not going to... Again, this goes back, you know, what I've said time and time again. Superhero characters are, you know, triumph over the actors who play them. Would I like to see all the Netflix people come back? Absolutely. Of course, yeah. I loved all of them. Okay. Yes, that includes Danny as Iron Fist. Yes.
You're the one.
I love Iron Fist, the Iron Fist show. I was a defender.
You were a defender of the Defenders.
I love the Defenders.
The Defenders guys are pretty good, yeah.
It was.
And I didn't mind. Look, I'll admit, I didn't mind. The Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm.
My issue came with the martial arts, because I'm a martial artist.
Mm-hmm.
When I can tell that it's not done, especially in the first season.
I can see that the first season, it could have been better. And I think that they improved in nearly every area in season two.
I'll agree.
Yeah.
So, yeah. To create that Marvel Knights banner. Start with Blades. Then bring in Ghost Rider. You know, and then go from there. But that's what I think they should do.
Mm-hmm.
So, if Kevin Feige and whoever the hell is the head honcho at Disney.
Now, if they came
Bob
to you.
Bob Iger, get on that.
Now, if they came to you for ideas for Ghost Rider, would you tell them to do a continuation of Robbie Reyes from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or do like a kind of prequel-ish thing with Johnny Cage?
Well, look, here's the thing. I really do. One of the things, I've come around on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, I used to hate it in the first season. I thought it was just pandering with their random Marvel references, you know, oh, Tony Stark this, or...
I liked it, but that's just me. But
everybody here is, I'm conceding a point. I gave it another chance. I came back for season two, and I enjoyed it. So I've been, you know, I'm back on board. I've been on board since. And I'm actually really looking forward to season six or whatever it is they're on.
Yes, I still have yet to watch the whole last season.
But yeah, mine is, I'm halfway through it. I got it on DVR. I'm slow, but there's so much crap on
there. That's fine. But I still think that that season where they chopped it up into Ghost Rider, LMD, and then Agents of Hydra, and they chopped them into three, that is the best season of the show. So I think that was, what, season four, I believe?
I think so.
That is the best season of the show. And so, not just because they brought in Ghost Rider, which I was just like, I lost my crap on.
I loved what they did with him, and the visuals were good.
Mm-hmm. For a ABC show, for network TV, their CGI on Robbie Reyes as Ghost Rider was fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that, with Johnny Cage, in the comics, from what I know of the comics, he's presented more traditional, Flaming Skull. With Robbie, it's a little bit more stylized to the point where it almost looks like it's a skull-shaped helmet. It's a lot more style, and I like that. And I also like that in his episode, if I'm remembering correctly, in like his origin episode or something, we get to see a flashback to when he got the powers.
Yes.
We saw a blurry, out of focus Johnny Cage.
That was cool.
It wasn't Nick Cage, but it was still cool to see.
But was it in continuity with Nick Cage?
You know what? Nick Cage is just so awesome. Let's just bring him in and just retroactively say, sure.
Yeah. So, by the way, before we move on to our next topic, because we should really do that. But what are your, Jen, don't give me a review now, but because I want to do these.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy the Ghost Rider movies?
I really liked the first one. It was my whole introduction to the character.
Mine as well.
I'm kind of oddly torn on Spirit of Vengeance. I enjoyed it very much, but it almost
felt like a totally different movie.
It felt out of place compared to the first one, because when you have Nick Cage as Johnny, pissing fire, as he's the Ghost Rider, it's okay, but my favorite part of that movie is when he gets into when he's in full, possessed by the Ghost Rider, however that works. And he gets into the big construction vehicle, and then that just engulfs in flames.
Yeah,
I love that part.
Awesome. Yeah. Just to look forward to.
Exactly. It'll be interesting to go back and actually watch those movies again too. So.
And by the way. I really do enjoy the first one. You know why, right?
Oh, gee. I wonder if it has anything to do with Carmen Electra.
Not Carmen Electra?
No, not Carmen Electra. Who is it?
Although, she's very attractive.
I'm sorry. Yeah. No offense.
Eva Mendes, one of my multiverse earthwives. Come on.
I'm going to quit. First off, I'm going to quit. I'm going to quit because I'm sorry, Eva, that I called you Carmen Electra. I'm sorry. No, my bad. I'm an idiot. And second of all, you and your earthwives.
Part of my shtick, leave it alone. People enjoy it, at least one person. Steven loves it.
Love you, brother.
And I have no idea where she is on what earth she's on. No clue. But we'll get there then. Now, do you know, Ryan, about the show Altered Carbon? Have you ever seen it?
I have not seen it, but I know of it. I've seen, only trailers, but I've never taken the time to sit down and watch it.
Wow. Season one was a fantastic season on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And unlike the Marvel Netflix shows, they are continuing with Altered Carbon. And
I thought Netflix was just canceling everything at this point. So it feels like it.
Season two, basically the general story of season one is that it's set in a future where consciousness is digitized and stored. So a prisoner returns to life in a new body and must solve a mind-bending murder to win back his freedom. It's an interesting concept.
So that's what Colonel Rick Flagg is doing in that movie.
Yeah, okay. And yeah, in the first season, it had Joel Kinnaman.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic actor outside, you know.
Yeah. And the second season is going to be headlined by Anthony Mackie.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah. So, but that's in production now. And I'm looking forward to it. I enjoyed the first season, and I recommend if you get a chance to check it out yourself. I think you'll like it.
Yeah, yeah. If I ever get the chance, I'll definitely, you know, to take a look at it.
I think you'll dig it. And it's cool because what's cool about it is that not only did we get the announcement that season two has started production, but there's also the announcement of the fact that in May, Dynamite Comics will be producing a comic based on Alter Carbon.
That's cool. Well, it's nice to see, you know, a project that, you know.
So basically,
you know, being this successful, getting a second season renewal, getting a comic book, you know, that's
cool because it started as a book,
mm-hmm.
it became a streaming show, and now it's becoming a comic book. So it's cool.
Awesome.
But I'll be checking it out.
Mm-hmm.
And for fans of Anthony Mackie and Altered Carbon, it has officially started production. So before you know it, we'll be seeing season two. We also have some more. I guess that was a good segue, unintentional. Speaking, you know, with Anthony Mackie being in the Marvel Universe,
mm-hmm.
we have some Marvel news, specifically in terms of Hulu. You probably know, Ryan, that Hulu is, I think, 60% owned by Disney. Ergo, Marvel, by proxy, mm-hmm. owns it, right?
mm-hmm.
But Hulu and Marvel Television have partnered to produce 4 adult animated series, according to Variety. And no, they're not producing 4 pornos, but 4 adult.
If they follow up, you know, if they make the Howard the Duck show, anything like the movie, it might become a porno accidentally.
Could be. but so basically, the shows will be following 4 characters: Howard the Duck, MODOK, Hit Monkey, and Tigra and Dazzler. Like Marvel's Netflix Defenders show that we previously talked about, the 4 characters will eventually team up into an animated series known, and they'll form a group called The Offenders.
I love that.
Which is a great nickname. So Howard the Duck is going to be written and executive produced by Kevin Smith and Dave Willis. Kevin Smith teamed with Howard the Duck. Sounds like a match made in heaven, oddly enough.
I've always wanted Kevin, you know, because he's so, not super involved, but he directs episodes of Flash and Supergirl, and he's involved in knowing a lot of the DC side of things. I've always wanted to see him do Marvel TV. I was, like, taken aback when I heard that he was doing that he was involved with Howard the Duck, but at the same time, like, that's just right up his alley. That's going to make it must-watch for me.
Right. Same here. I'll confess, I can't say I'm a huge Howard the Duck fan because that'd be a lie. But this pairing intrigues me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen the movie, so maybe that's something we'll have to go back and do.
I've only seen like clips of it and such. The most I know about Howard the Duck is his MCU appearances in the 2 Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
And he was. He was
which they were fun. They were fun and unexpected.
And he was voiced by Seth Green, who is a Buffy, the Vampire Slayer alumni.
No, it all comes back to Buffy.
For me, it does.
I wonder if they'll get. Sorry, I wonder if they'll get Seth Green to come back and do the voice, or if they'll find someone new.
I have no idea, but that'd be cool.
It would be cool.
So MODOK is going to be written and executive produced by Jordan Blum and Patton Oswalt.
I love Patton.
Blum has worked on Community and American Dad. And if I have to tell you what Patton Oswalt has been in, you need to watch more TV.
Exactly. He was who I'm pretty sure everyone thought was going to be the first set of LMDs on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I was like, oh, no, wait, that's actually real sibling crap. Ever since they were introduced and they just kept popping up and introducing themselves as new, I know other characters, I'm like, oh, that's so an LMD.
Yeah. And good point, yeah. Yeah, he was on it. That's right. He's got the
connection. Yeah.
So, anyway, MODOK is basically, it centers around an egomaniacal supervillain with a really big head and a really little body.
Exactly.
So, basically, a bobblehead who struggles to maintain control of his evil organization and his demanding family. That sounds absolutely bonkers, but hilarious.
Yes, because these shows are probably not MCU related, and that's fine. Not everything needs to be MCU related, but still, you know, I've always wanted to see something be done with MODOK because he's just one of those out there villains. If I ever had one, you know, Marvel Studios ever came to me and was like, what's one character you want us to do a serious, you know, take on? I just want to, like, truth or dare them and be like, I dare to do MODOK. Make MODOK look convincing.
You know, they'd stop listening to me because I just keep yelling about Blade. They'd be like, I read enough already. But yeah, so that's the description of MODOK. So it should be fun. Then we have Hitmonkey.
Who I have never heard of before.
Me neither. So I'll tell you a little bit about it. Okay. It's going to be written and executive produced by Josh Gordon and Will Speck. They're a creative team that co-directed films like Blades of Glory and Office Christmas Party. I've heard of both those movies. I've seen both those movies.
I've wanted to see Office Christmas Party. I've seen Blades of Glory.
Pretty, you know, funny stuff. Mm-hmm. The show tells the tale of a wronged Japanese snow monkey mentored by the ghost of an American assassin as he cuts a wide swath through the Tokyo underworld. Well, sign me up for that because that sounds fascinating.
It sounds so WTF.
Yeah.
What the frack?
Assassin, martial arts. It's like Katana, but if she was a monkey. Kind of. Not really, but it's all similar.
Oh my god.
No, this is. I find this intriguing.
All right. Let me see a freaking trailer and judge you from that.
It's intriguing. Look, I'll watch it. I'll give anything a shot.
Sure.
And then we got Tigra and Dazzler from writers and executive producers. Erica Rivenoja and Chelsea Handler.
really? Chelsea's involved with this?
Yeah.
Nice.
The first lady, who I couldn't pronounce her name, worked on the story for the film Girls Trip, and also shows including The Last Man on Earth, South Park, and Grounded for Life. Chelsea Handler, we all know who Chelsea Handler is. So, there's that. but yeah, it's.
It's gonna be like what, a team up show with these two?
Yes, and it's very, very politically and socially aware. as well it's been described.
So Marvel is doing something with the mutants, huh?
Okay. Well, technically, because Dazzler, right?
Dazzler. I don't know about Tigra, but it's like as soon as I heard, I knew Dazzler. Yeah.
I know Dazzler. That's like the Taylor Swift mutant version. The mutant version of Taylor Swift.
She's the one that shoots off fireworks or some.
But does she, my question is, can she shake it off? That went way over your head. You know, the Taylor Swift.
No, song? I just threw something on the ground as a WTF.
Okay. Well, come on, you know that song.
I don't live under a rock. Some days I wish I did.
I don't know about the geography over there in Cleveland. I don't know how many rocks you have or anything that you've made very well.
But the ground is frozen. It's all one giant rock.
Okay, so there you go. So yeah, I'm excited about these four shows and that they're adult themed and stuff. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. And because, you know, you made that mention of, you know, Marvel's kind of jokingly calling these guys the Offenders. You know that's got to be building up to probably a miniseries of, you know, these five characters having to team up or something.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. I mentioned it.
Okay, good. Because just Howard the Duck and MODOK, just take my money.
That's going to be funny.
Exactly.
I hope
Patton Oswalt voices MODOK. That'd be hilarious.
I think he is. I think it's come out that he is going to voice him. So.
God, I thank you. Thank you.
I'm excited for all this, for sure.
Mm-hmm. You too.
All right, so now we got to tackle something that normally we wouldn't really get into here, but we're going to because... over at Revenge of the Fans, Mario Francisco Robles, the editor-in-chief over there, dropped a scoop. A really big scoop, because according to his sources, we have our next Batman, or are very close to having our next Batman. It's not 100% a done deal yet, but according to Mario's scoop, Armie Hammer is apparently in final negotiations to star as the Batman for Matt Reeves. Let's just, before we talk about any of the corresponding controversy that followed this news, speak to the news itself. What do you think of Armie Hammer as potentially Batman?
I mean, the dude was already cast as Batman, you know, over a decade ago. So we know he's, you know, to people, you know, Warner Brothers, he's got the talent. I think he's a fantastic actor. You know, the only thing I could even remotely think of that's ever, you know, irked me about him were his Stan Lee comments last year. Not at Stan Lee himself, but how people, you know, pay tribute to him. But that doesn't take away from, you know, his acting skills and how he is as a person overall. And, I mean, the dude The dude's already put on the Batman costume at least, you know, once before. It just never, you know, made its way to, you know, the audience never got to see it. So, you know, if this pans out and you know, stays this way, then I'll be excited and I'll be happy. Because, I mean, he's not in his late 20s, but he's not...
He's 32.
Yeah. So, early 30s.
6'5".
If they, you know, want to, because, you know, we keep going back and forth. Is this going to be in, you know, quote unquote continuity with Batfleck? Is this going to be its own thing? Is this going to be a young Batman? Is this going to be a Batman of, you know, you know, at, you know, Batflex age. Well, I think with Hammer, you can get someone who, you know, the best of both worlds, you know, the best of being, you know, the Batfleck and also someone younger. Because, you know, with a little bit of makeup, you can have Armie Hammer looking like he's in his, you know, mid to late 20s when he would be starting out, at when Bruce Wayne would be starting out as Batman, you know, in most continuities. Add a little bit of gray to his hair, and you can have a 32-year-old play a late 30s, 40-year-old Bruce Wayne, you know. But by casting a 32-year-old, you can have him around for a longer period of time in the role.
So, well, sure, he could at least do 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what Warner Brothers is going to want to be looking at, is people who are going to want to commit to 5, 10 years, however many movies they can fit in that time, you know. So going with someone younger who can, you know, to me, Hammer has that look of, again, best of both worlds. You know, a little bit of makeup, you can make him look younger. A little bit of makeup, you can make him look older. So, so I'm all on board with it, again, because of the fact he was also cast as Batman previously for George Miller's Justice League Mortal. So the dude's already won the role before.
Yeah. So, I love the if if this comes to pass, I love the choice. Again, his height is you know, like, look wise, he's pitch perfect for the role.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's beyond and over me, but look wise, he is right for it. It's, again, I would have loved to see what he would have done as a 19-year-old. In Justice League Mortal, because that's when he—that's how old he was when he got cast.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's been that long.
Mortal would have been 2006, 2007.
Oh, 2008, wouldn't it?
Well, they would have started filming in.
Yeah, they would have filmed in 07, but.
Yeah.
So it would have been before The Dark Knight. Wow. It would have been around the same time as The Dark Knight, but yeah. So I would have loved to see what he would have done with the role. And like I said, I liked him in The Social Network, where he played two parts, two twin brothers. And I liked him in, I liked The Lone Ranger, sue me. I don't know if you've watched it, Ryan. But...
No, but it's on my, you know, massive so sick to-do list.
If he eventually gets cast, you're probably going
to watch it. Sure, let's do Lone, yeah, let's you're do gonna, Lone Ranger. Let's do Lone Ranger and then The Man from U.N.C.L.E., World's Finest.
Batman versus Superman, what it should have been. No. But no, look, we'll do Lone Ranger either way, but if he becomes Batman, we'll do it sooner. How about that?
Yep, sure.
And if he doesn't become Batman, you may watch it and then moan about, man, he should have been Batman.
But I already feel like I'm predisposed to that, because I'm kind of am on the Hammer. I'm on Team Army for Batman.
I said straight out on Twitter. I said, if Armie Hammer is cast as Batman, I will change the Tales from the DC Multiverse, the podcast theme, to You Can't Touch This by MC Hammer. So I'm just waiting for the official announcement now. So Mario puts out this report, and look, within an hour and a half, 2 hours, you've got the rap via Umberto Gonzalez, and if you can't see me, but I'm rolling my eyes, you've got Variety's Justin Kroll. And you've got the Hollywood Reporter's Boris Kitt all coming out and debunking the story. Then you've got, you know, online fans, quote unquote, like ripping into Mario because, whoa, look, you don't know what you're talking about. You're full of it. Look, these guys, these Hollywood trade guys denied it. Now, I'm just going to throw something out there. Now, in the scoop game, a lot of these guys pride themselves on being first, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now Mario's been doing this for about 5 years. He's been involved. He was involved with Latino Review, and then he struck out on his own. But Revenge of the Fans is what, a year old? I should know. I'm part of the site, but yeah, it's about a year old. Do you think these guys are going to take kindly to losing this potential scoop to a site that's been out there for a year and a guy who's been doing this for 5 years? I think they'd be kind of upset about losing that because it's the Batman casting. And also, so they're going to go out of their way to say, no, it's not true, but, you know. So there was that. But let me tell you something I know about Mario. Mario doesn't do this for the clicks. So a story can get clicks. Or he's not doing it for the fame of it all, just for the notoriety of it all. Now, granted, can a scoop like that, provided that it comes to pass, really put Revenge of the Fans on the map? Of course. And Mario took this risk because it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be, you know, to nail down the Batman casting, you know. But Mario doesn't just take this stuff lightly and post any BS that he hears. Yeah. In fact, if you listen to his most recent podcast, he comes out and says he heard from three different sources that things with Army Hammer were intensifying, and basically the role is Army Hammer's if he wants it. That's where the negotiations are. So, but Mario, believe me, trust me, folks, I know for a fact that Mario would not post something that if he didn't believe 100% in his source, and he didn't believe in himself to be true. And here's the best thing about Mario. If this turns out to be inaccurate and it's wrong, he'll come on online and he'll own up to it. He'll flat out admit it. But let's not forget that every scooper in the business has been wrong before. I mean, for heaven's sake, Umberto's been wrong so many times, he could change his Twitter handle to Wrongberto because that's so many times he's been wrong. So, and yet his word is taken as gospel. Like, you know, he posts a scoop and most people fawn over it. And, you know, the Hollywood Reporter and Variety are not infallible either. So this isn't just me bashing on Umberto, because that's not the case. But like, every one of these guys makes mistakes. But again, mm-hmm. knowing Mario the way I do, he would not post it if he didn't 100% believe it. And I know for a fact that he sat on some scoops and not posted them, even though he could. And it's more, the reason why he sat on some things is more of integrity and not wanting to spoil things. So
he is sat on, you know, you have told me maybe a scoop or two. That he's sat on stuff while you know that other sites, like We Got This Covered or Umberto with Heroic Hollywood, they would have thrown that out there within 10 minutes of learning about it.
Yeah.
Because people have no integrity. You know, people like that, not Mario, but like Gonzalo.
No, I flat out told you, I don't know what Mario knows, but from the interacting with him, I know for a fact that he's sitting on certain things.
Yeah.
So, and he wouldn't, like, if he just wanted the notoriety and wanted the fame, he would easily mm-hmm. just post, you know, everything he hears, and he doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's right that, you know, people attack him and say, "Oh, you're wrong," and I hope you're, mm-hmm. You know, I've heard your I hope your site goes under and mm-hmm. all this negativity. And you look, again, if he's wrong, he'll come out and say, you know, I mean, it was inaccurate, or I made a mistake, or, and this is why. But
he'll do what others, you know, other clickbaity, you know, sites who we've already named already. He'll apologize.
So point is, yeah, go on.
No, but it's just like, what, I don't know Mario as much as you do, or Revenge of the Fans as much as you do. But in the relatively short amount of time that I have gotten to know about him and gotten, you know, interested in the site and this, that, and the other, and seen how Twitter and online and just the internet at large reacted to this report. And yet, you know, other people, again, who we've already named, and I won't say their names again, you know, they've gotten stuff wrong, you know, incredible amount of times beforehand, but there was never any uproar at them.
Yeah.
So it does feel a little kind of hypocritical or double standard that Mario may or may not have gotten something wrong, and, you know, for God's sakes, people are sending threats to him and whatnot. But yet other sites that are more clickbaity, that have a far worse track record when it comes to accuracy of the reports, they're still being cited by the fans and other podcasters and other news sites almost as if they're the gospel, when their track record should show otherwise.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, look, like I said, he wouldn't have posted that to the site if he didn't trust his source and believe in the information that he was getting to be valid. So mm-hmm. I'm going to stand by Mario.
Mm-hmm. And I'll stand by him too.
And I firmly believe that Army Hammer will be the next, announced as the next Batman. And I personally look forward to the day where Mario is vindicated. And I hope he, you know, he's too nice of a guy. He might not do this. But if I'm him, man, when that thing goes down, I'm not that nice of a guy. But if I'm him, when that thing goes down, I'm taking a victory lap and I'm tagging everybody that shot him down on Twitter and social media and just having a field day. but that's me, and I'm not as magnanimous as Mario, so.
Yeah, go on.
But either way, I look forward to him being vindicated and the Bat-Hammer announcement.
Mm-hmm. Now I got two final thoughts on this quickly. One, I would like for it to be Hammer, but I'm gonna be supportive of whoever gets cast anyway. Yeah. I would never have thought Ben Affleck when he was cast. I was actually kind of on Team Josh Brolin, surprisingly, for when I heard that they wanted to do older Batman. But as soon as it was announced as Affleck, I was probably one of, what, 15 people that didn't lose their ever-loving shit over it. And two, you know, we didn't really talk about it, but Army himself came out and denied the reports and all that. I have found quite a good number of stories from, like, early 2014. You know, just doing a quick check while we've been talking, a quick Google check of from 2014, Jason Momoa denying that he was Aquaman. So, this is how stuff works, folks.
Wasn't Josh Horowitz from MTV supposed to punch him in the face?
I'm seeing articles about him getting punched in the face or whatnot, but yeah.
Yeah, he basically told MTV's Josh Horowitz, 2014, that if he was announced as Aquaman, that Josh could punch him in the face. Now, lo and behold, We went to watch an Aquaman movie in December.
With Jason Momoa.
Starring the guy that said, I'm not Aquaman.
And who's played Aquaman three times already.
Three movies. And let's go no further than Ben Affleck, Batman, right? The last incarnation of Batman. Who, on Jimmy Kimmel, went and said, oh yeah, I'm directing it. Just give me time. Give me time.
Days before he dropped out.
Yeah. And then what, a week later, I'm not directing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the press release, but I'm not directing it, but I'm committed to still playing Batman. Yeah, me and Matt Reeves, we're going
to... Cut to what, a week or two ago where Ben Affleck does that weird look into the camera? Yeah. I am not Batman.
No. But then he said, but then the best part was at Comic-Con, right, when Justice League was coming out. Yeah. What did he say to a panel of, what, 6,000 people in that room? I'd be an ape on the effing ground for Matt Reeves. That's what he said. Who's starring in the Batman again? Not Ben Affleck.
Guys, we're not cheering Ben Affleck leaving. It's But come on. Just because the actress, the person, you know, the person involved says something. I mean,
it's called... They're called NDAs, non-disclosure agreement, meaning if Armie Hammer is indeed in final talks, as this report, you know, in insinuates. And but let's be clear, Mario never said he already signed. He never said the deal was done.
Mm-hmm.
In the report,
he's so in final. Yeah. He's in talks. It could still happen. It could, you know, fall apart. It almost fell apart with Matt Reeves directing.
But the point is, even if Armie Hammer wanted to jump from the rooftop, right, and say and scream at the top of his lungs, "I'm playing Batman," legally he can't. Until Warner Brothers puts out that fancy, what are you doing?
What is that? What? I'm just taking out my frustrations on styrofoam with a pair of scissors at just this whole freaking scenario. Sorry, I didn't know it was that loud.
Sorry, folks. Stop stabbing. Pretend crazy Twitter people.
And I have to deal with a lot of crazy Twitter people.
Yeah.
Oh Lord.
But no, so even if he wanted to, he's crazy. Until that press release comes out, he's contractually not allowed to. Mm-hmm. Let's clear that up. Mario further in his recent podcast said that that his sources have told him that to expect an official announcement sometime during the Shazam film, during the release, like after the after the release of Shazam, because they're gonna capitalize on the goodwill of the Shazam is good enough. So we won't have to wait too long.
Exactly, Shazam's right around the corner, pretty much.
So yeah, so there's that, and you were saying to move away from this news, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying you recently watched Umbrella Academy, right?
Yeah, from one superhero thing to another. Yes,
don't give us a full review.
No. We would need to save that for like when you watch it. We can talk about it in length.
Yeah, it'll be a whole show, but for now, just
okay. We should a little dedicated segment, a la like what I did when I talked about Glass.
Yeah, general. Yeah.
I mean, it is beautiful. It is lovely. It is mesmerizing. It is emotional. It made me tear up several times. It's, you know, about these, you know, kids that were trained to be superheroes. And, you know, 20 years later, they have to come back together to save the world. That is the elevator pitch that I would give you for Umbrella Academy. So while, yes, the big grand plot is trying to save mankind from an impending apocalypse, the true strength of the show is in the characters and all their their interactions with each other. I mean, this is just one of the most beautifully talented, you know, group of actors that I've ever seen. You know, I knew who none of these people outside of Ellen Page, I knew who none of these people were, and I want to go and watch all of their stuff if possible. It is just, it is so utterly fantastic. Based off of the comics written by Gerard Way of My Chemical Romance, I think that's the band he's involved with. Mm. That was published by Dark Horse. And next time I go out to a comic book store that has a nice, you know, sizable chunk of graphic novels, I'm going to be looking for this thing, because I had never heard of Umbrella Academy. And I mean, I was in tears the last two episodes because it's just so damn good. Oh, it is an impressive work. It is one of the best. I would outright say that outside of the big two, outside of Marvel, DC, this is the best, you know, not counting a Marvel or DC thing whatsoever. This is the best superhero show I've ever seen. You know, if I were to take away anything Marvel or DC.
Fascinating. All right.
It brings back memories of like the first season of Heroes. It's that good.
Is there a cheerleader?
No.
Oh, because, you know. Save the cheerleader, save the world.
No, there's nothing like that. Oh. But, you know, we do have, you know, a 12-year-old boy who time travels and says, in 8 days, the world's going to come to an end. Oh. And the most dysfunctional superhero family in existence has to, you know, get over their shit in order to save the world.
All right. I can't wait to see it.
Uh-huh.
And I'll definitely be reading the book, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have to wait till I go to a comic book store, because I'll just wait for...
because you use Comixology. I prefer the old... I'm old-fashioned, folks.
Listen, I had to make the sad realization that starting in June, no, in May, I think... I've had to pare down my physical books to about 8 titles. So that's where we are. The 8 most
I
want.
I can at least respect your fiscal responsibility, because it's far better than mine.
Yeah. So it's going to be 8 physicals that I really want to keep up with. And the rest is all digital, baby. But yeah, I'll be definitely checking out the show soon, so we can review it.
Because the night that we're recording this, 30 minutes before we started this phone call, I finished the finale, and I need more. I need more, because this is just too damn good.
I think it's already been renewed for second season, correct?
I don't know. I'm going to do a quick check on that, because, hey, you know, we're known for being... you know, on top of things.
I'm pretty sure I read something or heard something to the effect of it's been renewed.
I don't say anything, but it's with the reception it's getting, I would be very, very surprised if it doesn't get renewed again. Right, like,
there we go. So I'll be checking it out, and we'll be reviewing it as soon as I do. So keep listening to this podcast to eventually hear that.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any Roswell this week.
No.
Took a hiatus for a week.
No.
Probably due to, I don't know why, but... we did have Project Blue Book, so what happened this week?
Okay. Where is it? Oh, my God. I had a summary up. Oh, my God.
Sure.
Oh, my God. I did. I was so... you know what? I swear, in about 20 episodes, people, we'll have stuff ready. I promise. Oh, it's going to take some time. Okay. All right. So what episode was this? This is episode 7 of Project Blue Book, titled The Scoutmaster. You know, Hynek, you know, in this episode, while Professor Hynek investigates a scoutmaster's disappearance after he and his troop allegedly witnessed a strange craft hovering in the woods, Captain Quinn is pulled into a rogue interrogation mission for General Damien Dark.
Yeah. We got our first case that very well could be a hoax.
I mean, this case was, like every episode of the show, is inspired by, you know, a direct incident, even if they take, obviously, creative liberties with talking about it. And the real-world incident, I mean, you know, for everything Project Blue Book, you know, the government tried to find ways to explain away everything. But this one, I think, is definitely one that even believers such as myself can look at and be like, yeah, this person was faking it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, and you know, the cool thing is, you know, we have the main camp counselor and was it the sheriff? What was it?
Sheriff or a deputy, someone high up in the
the camp counselor and a high ranking officer of the local police orchestrate this find, right? And we supposedly they found an alien skull. So Hynek does his investigation, and what we're led to believe is that this was all orchestrated by the sheriff and the scoutmaster.
So that they, to the point where they even tried to get, you know, a book deal or something. And,
yeah,
you know,
they were trying to get money.
Make money off of it.
Because when you would report to the local paper or the radio about UFO settings back then, you would get paid if you had quote unquote proof. So, so they were in it for the money. And how did Hynek discover? I mean, okay, so they got caught because of a telegram that they sent, and one of the campers, worked for the telegraph company. And they had sent the
but before the scoutmaster had actually been found or, you know, returned miraculously, you know, the sheriff or the deputy had sent a telegram to Hollywood or some big paper, some TV station, something. How he's returned and he's got this incredible story. And this telegram was sent before the guy, you know, stumbled into the church or the community center.
And there's also a trick the Hynek has been able to discover where if about the skull itself.
I must have been a little off, a little loopy when I was watching this episode
what was the distinction of the trick?
Okay, like I guess at the time, so in like the early 50s, fake skulls would be made of, I think they said acrylic or something, and that when held up to a source of light, like a lighter or something, they would shine. And that's one way you could distinguish a fake skull to a real skull. And, you know, so they're out in the woods, and, you know, they find this skull with, you know, that's a little elongated, looks weird for sure. And Hynek does a little lighter trick and it doesn't shine back at all.
Yeah.
So proving that this skull actually is legit. And I lost it, and I started laughing when, you know, the Scoutmaster was like, see, there's no shine. You have to believe me now. You don't need any other evidence, apparently.
I guess not, yeah. No, but it was cool because, again, it really it highlights Hynek's entirely, like, his smarts, his know-how. And I think that's something that they've always talked about, but they, you know,
that, you know,
to a certain degree. So I like that they went that extra mile and showed.
And I like what they're doing with Hynek here. And it's, you know, they either, and a lot of TV shows that deal with, you know, this subject of aliens, UFOs, conspiracy, stuff like that, you know, most of the time the characters are, you know, portrayed as being 100% believers or 100% skeptics. You know, they either don't believe anything could have been faked and believe everyone, or nothing can be real and there's all, you know, practical, you know, more quote-unquote logical, you know, earthbound, you know, explanations, whatnot. What they're doing with Hynek is kind of actually what I actually personally identify with, because, yeah, I am a believer, you know, that we're not alone and that we're being visited and this, that, and the other. That doesn't mean I'm going to believe every story, and that doesn't mean I believe everything or every piece of evidence or every video or every, you know, account.
Sure.
You know, I do approach things from a, you know, I would say open I hope this doesn't sound paradoxical, but, you know, personally, I do approach, you know, cases and stuff like this from a open but skeptical mindset, where it's like, I'm not ready to outright believe them, you know, right off the bat. I'm not ready to outright, you know, poo-poo away their story or whatnot. I go into it with an open mind, but, you know, if the trail leads to a dead end and there's nothing there, you have to just accept that, oh, this person was just full of, you know, crap. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so I like that aspect of the plot. And but the other one that was intriguing was the whole thing with Quinn and and the Russian trader that tortures at the behest of
Good Lord, he actually stabbed the guy with a fork.
Yeah, at the behest of Damien Dark.
it's General Harding, but come on, it's Damien Dark.
Yeah, his actual name is General Harding, but we're from here on out.
He is General Dark.
Just follow along.
Exactly.
You know, write it down so you know for future reference.
Exactly. Have your little decoder pen ready for you.
But, you know, they're really keying in on this trader that we met in the
in last week's episode.
Yeah, right. That's right. I think it was last week's. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like the whole breakfast aspect of it. That he, you know, he basically is making him. He makes some bacon and eggs, and I'm like, man.
Oh, okay.
If I gotta get interrogated, the guy who's interrogated better make me bacon and eggs. I'll sing like a canary, baby.
If you're gonna ask me difficult questions, you're making me breakfast.
Give me bacon and eggs. I'll tell you everything you want to know.
We're that cheap.
Oh, yeah. I'm easy. No, that was interesting. Like the fact that Captain Quinn could go that far, like that he's that much of a hardcore kind of thing.
Yep.
I didn't expect that from him.
I'm with you.
But what does that say about his past though? Like what I mean, is he just a Air Force guy? I think there's more to him.
I'm sure he's had to do things that that keeps him up at night still during World War II.
But also, I like the fact that he questions, because the higher ups now are questioning Hynek, and he asks Hynek if he took anything from their last case, to which Hynek denies it, of course. But
so do you? So
we
do
know
you
for
think
a fact that he took the key, though.
So do you think that that means, you know, General Dark knew about the key?
It's a possibility. Like, he was acting as if.
Because as I was watching the episode, it's like this whole, you know, this whole time I was thinking, what are they talking about? What did Hynek take that the general would know about? And it was all, and it wasn't until after, you know, or close to the episode ending that I was like, could it be talking about the key? Yeah. You know,
they certainly implied that he knew about the key. He knew about something.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing I recall Hynek taking is the key.
Yeah.
So he could very well know. But then at the end of the episode, you see the key is in the Hynek's trunk. And all of a sudden,
I think he's going to take it to the caves, and it's going to create for him a teleportation thing to the Fortress of Solitude in the Arctic.
I had to.
Once I saw cave paintings. And,
no,
you know,
but I thought of that too. I'm like, oh man, they're going full Smallville here.
Oh God, it's the Kawachi Caves all over again.
And look, those may be the same caves. Who knows? It's shot in Vancouver, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. Oh crap, he found some caves. That means some witches are close by.
Oh God. That was a god awful episode. But anyway,
That was a season. Let's talk about the whole season.
But did you see the? Like the key was in his trunk.
Uh huh.
And it busted one of its his taillights, which was
that's where it's like, was I just not paying attention or something? What was going on? What caused it? Did the key start? Did you see like the key started to glow as he was?
I didn't see any glowing. I didn't see any glowing.
But then it's like he closes the door and the red plastic around the light, you know, the backlight on his car just cracks. I'm like, what the hell? What's going on?
The mystery deepens, my friend.
I'm impatient. I need answers now.
It's got a season two, so it means we're probably not going to get all the answers at the end of the season, that's for sure.
If they leave us on a cliffhanger, oh my God.
Now that you know they're coming back, you know they are.
Damn it.
But you know, Ryan.
Don't do this to me.
Oh, now that you put it out there, they're like, oh, that guy Ryan doesn't want to.
How are we going to piss off Ryan Hill? Yeah.
I'm convinced every property you like, the creators and producers sit around the table thinking, all right, let's list the top five ways we can piss off Ryan and pick one.
Oh, no. ABC wins on that front about how they can piss me off. Huh. Two seasons of the V remake. How we piss off Ryan? Let's not even bring it back for a third season.
That had so many of my multiverse wives. It had Laura Vandiver, and it had Marina Becker, right? So,
let's not give any closure whatsoever. That's how we piss off Ryan.
I'm tempted to eventually do that show so you can relive it and relive the non-closure. All right,
Adam.
You just hung up with folks. Yeah.
I thought about it.
I know you did. But, you know, we've come to that portion of the show, right? Your favorite part. Where we have to rate the episode. So,
I mean, I guess I would give it a... I guess I would do like a solid like 8 out of 10 or something. You know, it was pretty good, pretty decent. You know, I like you know, like we said, the main Scoutmaster, you know, plot. I do like that. You know, finally we came across a case that was a little too good to be true, and Hynek, even though he is starting to become more accepting that this is the reality of the world, that some people are still gonna, you know, try and take advantage of that and use it for a personal financial gain.
Well, in my opinion, we've already seen the alien, so as far as I'm concerned,
mm-hmm.
they've already given us the proof.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was
nice to see that kind of challenge come to Hynek, not something so that where he has to kind of
8 out of 10 is a letter grade. Where would that put you?
I put it a B, just a solid B.
Okay. I'll go a little bit higher. I'll give it an A minus.
Okay.
I like the fact that they went there and gave us a fake out case instead of everything. You know, instead they've given us pretty much, quote unquote, confirmed cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this one was the false alarm, and I like the fact that they changed it up and went there. And I wasn't expecting the stuff with Captain Quinn, so that was cool too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an A minus for me. But that brings this episode to a close, my friend. So with that said, where can people find you online if they want to keep this discussion going or talk to you about anything else?
Well, if people want to argue at me or yell at me, I should say, that I'm not happy that it seems like they're going to try and force an R rating on Birds of Prey, or if they misinterpret any comments I make tonight about me hating Batfleck for some reason, you can find me at The Amazing Rye Guy on Twitter.
Awesome.
And that's it.
and don't hate him. He's a good guy.
I just might not have your opinions.
Be nice to Ryan.
And I guess that upsets people that I have different opinions.
So, be nice to Ryan. He's a good guy. Right?
I try.
Be good to people, to each other, internet. What's wrong?
Be polite, or as Melania would say, be best.
Yeah.
Be best, people.
Yeah, I got nothing to follow up with. if you wanna follow me and interact on social media, you can do so at Superhero Sci-Fi. Be forewarned, I won't tolerate any anger, hostility, stupidity, like Ryan might. I'll just block you. But if you want to have a fun conversation on these matters and where we can embrace differing opinions, then by all means, follow me on Twitter there. Also, join the Tales from the DC Multiverse Facebook group. And send a request to join. We will add you and we can continue the conversation there. And yeah, that's it, folks. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Whether you're listening to this on a weekday or a weekend, have fun. And most importantly, live long and prosper.
Take care.